I think the philosophy that we're getting the sense of let's be more like Seattle in the sense. I'm not trying to make it all about Seattle, but they'll run first. Russell Wilson doesn't always throw it 40 times a game. You know, he'll throw it 22 times, 25 times a game. Let's be that team that is so good on defense, so good running the ball. And that may not be what a lot of fans want to hear. Fans just say, hey, let's just open it up. Let's throw it all over the place. Let's be exciting. I think Gus's vision is, I want to win the way Seattle's winning and the way other teams can win. Like that Baltimore is more like that. At times, when they need to open it up, they do open it up. But traditionally, they've been defense, solid running game, and enough in the passing game. Don't make, you know, big mistakes. That's been their identity.
Yeah, I've been fighting with this one, and one of the things I got to commit myself to doing this week is I want to look at some of the run-pass ratios for this team last year, or 2014, for when the game was close. You throw out some of those games where they're just down. So it's I'm battling on, okay, is it a run first or is it a run better philosophy? But I think it's more of a run better. You know, does that come in with, does Gus want to add some different concepts to that? Does he want to use his players differently? So, and, you know, if I'm a Jaguar fan, one of the things I want to hear during these interviews is Gus asking guys, how do you plan on using Melvin Gordon?
Well, if he's available to you in the second
round. At three.
No. And you know, I know you're kidding, but I know you want an upgrade at that position. Look, the problem is they need to upgrade at a lot of spots still on this football team. And are they still in best player available mode? I certainly think they're, you know, if Leonard Williams is there, the more and more you hear about him, the more and more you think that would be the likely selection.
Well, before week 17, if you would have did best player available at three, he probably would have been the guy. Well, then Marks goes down. I think now you need to take him.
Yeah.
You know, best player slash, hey.
Who also fits a need. Right, you know? Exactly. By the way, since Derek Marks having surgery today.
Okay.
The word I hear this morning around the building. So, you know, you got to wait sometimes for that to settle down. We've talked with Dr. Lucy plenty of times
about that. That's earlier than they predicted. They thought it may not be until February.
Well, that's good. Yeah. You know, the earlier you can get it done because, you know, you're looking at 8-9 months and you're pushing right up against the beginning of the season now with Derek Marks. We'll get into a bunch of stuff today. If you want to get on board, 641-1010 is the way to do it. Tweeted this out earlier this morning. It will be, I believe, officially announced later today. Greg Jones will retire tomorrow as a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And today, the Fan Feedback Spotlight has a Greg Jones-related theme to it. We ask you, all-time Jaguar roster, who is the most physically imposing guy on it? A lot of candidates to choose from, including Greg Jones, who had a physique that, you know, marble statues envy, I think, would be one way to put it. Foundation Professionals of Florida brings you the Fan Feedback Spotlight. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We'll continue to discuss the offensive coordinator position, upcoming Senior Bowl coaching going on as well with the Jacksonville Jaguars staff. You're going to be out there in Mobile. As you mentioned, you're looking forward to that, what is it, 6-hour drive out there?
That's what about it is, yeah. So going out Monday, coming back after practice on Thursday.
We will get into that. We'll hear from you checking in as well from the Senior Bowl next week, along with John Osier. Will be our eyes on the scene as far as that stuff goes. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you, Tyler Devitt as well. You can tweet the show at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL. Tyler, and of course, you can post on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars today if you'd like to weigh in on the Fan Feedback Spotlight. Most physically imposing Jacksonville Jaguar of all time. 641-1010, phone lines open to you. It's Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. Jaguars today here for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service, you name it, Metro Rooter handles it. Same day service, Saturday and Sunday included, the right people with the right equipment. They're the people I trust. You know, if I have a plumbing issue at my house, they're the ones I make the call to. The only call I make, 695-1911. You can log on to MetroRooter.com, get a complete list of their services and options. And I tell you, I trust them. And that's the most I could say about anybody. You know, that's the strongest endorsement I can give you is I use them myself, as I do with everybody that I endorse personally. And that is the case with Metro Rooter. They've done a fantastic job for me and our longtime sponsor here on not only Jaguars Today, but they were with me on the Mike Dempsey Show for quite a while as well. Fan Feedback Spotlight today brought to you by Foundation Professionals of Florida, Ed, which simply asks you the most physically imposing Jaguar of all time. Who was it? Greg Jones is going to expected to be announced today that he will retire tomorrow. Little ceremony, you know, one-day contract, that whole thing. Retire as a member of the Jags.
What have they done that last? I don't remember doing it since I've been here.
Fred.
Okay, so before me. Maselli.
I'm trying to think back. I'm sure that was the case with Tony. Tony.
Not too often.
I say Tony, yeah. Tony. Tony. No, not too often. They haven't had cause to do it too often, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jones is the only guy that he never played for this regime, but he's like the only guy that offseason that they wanted to come back. He took less money to sign with Houston, thinking, okay, last shot postseason, it fell apart.
Can't blame him.
Yeah. At the time, it's like, hey, I get it, and even the team said, hey, we made our offer, but you know, we understand why he's going there.
Yeah, somebody yesterday we were talking about if you had one free agent that you would like to see the Jags sign, if you could only sign one. Obviously, they're going to do a lot more than that, we hope. And somebody mentioned Frank Gore, and I said the same thing. You know, I think even if he could help this team, and I question how much he'd be able to help this team at his age, but he's got to be ring chasing at this point in his career, you would think, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's made a bunch of money. He's played for so many years.
I mean, Frank Gore, you look at his landscape, he'd be a perfect fit for a team like New England, who just goes for a running back every 6 weeks.
Right.
And, you know, like Fred went up there.
Yeah.
So, a couple other guys. Antonio, one of the guys from the Bengals, like in the early 2000s, went up there, won a championship. But
well, Corey Dillon went up there for several years. But he was actually still pretty good when he went up there. You had it's funny because they had Antoine Smith, the first Super Bowl, I want to say, right? Wasn't he the back of the first Super Bowl, former Buffalo Bill, right? And he was pretty much their workhorse guy. Then they had Corey Dillon, was pretty much a workhorse guy. And then they just, ever since then, they chopped it up, you know, with the Kevin Faulks of the world and the
Shane
Woodheads.
Vereen.
Yeah, all these guys. I mean, look at now, they got Jonas Gray, they got Brandon Bolden, they got LeGarrette Blount and Shane Vereen. And in any given week, you don't even know who's going to be active on that team. It works for them. You know, obviously it's not a team built around the running game, which is interesting, Ryan, to me, in today's NFL, where everything is so set up to facilitate the passing game. Is the philosophy of trying to build it, if in fact that's what Gus wants to do, be more of a run-first entity, is that the right way to go?
I don't think so. Because like you said, look at the best teams. Is this Green Bay? I mean, that said, I think you need the running back in place, but I don't think it should be your whole philosophy. You got to be able to pitch and catch in this league.
Well, New England doesn't have a set running back. Dan Heron was just scraps until New England or Indy just said, all right, we'll throw you in there. That's a quarterback-centric team.
You know, Seattle's got their guy. Green Bay's got Lacy, but they also bring in Starks. So, but
Seattle is more of a run for Seattle. If they are running the ball offensively, I think they play off that a lot. Play action and rollouts and stuff like that. They're not just a drop back and throw it 45 times a game team.
Correct. Because a lot of times they're playing with a lead too, and they can sort of, you know, the 2 minute drill becomes a 10 minute drill.
Right. And their quarterback, when called upon, has been phenomenal basically for three seasons. What about you, Tony? I mean, is this surprising to you? Is it a reflection of what they have on the roster, or do you think something that Gus has always wanted if it, in fact, moves in that direction?
I'm curious about it because it feels like you should be doing everything that you need to do to help your young quarterback. And, yeah, I think a running game can help a guy like that. I think that if you find something that is as special as what Seattle has found, that it's easy to do what Seattle is doing and committing to it. And I'm actually looking at the numbers right now. They led the league in rushing this year with 172 rush yards a game. That's 25 more than anybody else in
football.
Keep
in mind, Russell Wilson's running for almost 900 yards.
Right. He ran for 800 and something yards and 6 touchdowns. I mean, that obviously helped, and that's about what the difference was the yardage that he got this year compared to what he's gotten in years past. I think it's easy when you have Marshawn Lynch and a guy who runs the way that Russell Wilson does to say, we're going to commit to the run. When you have a defense that is as dominant as Seattle's, to commit to the run that way, I think in Jacksonville, they got to the passer a lot. I don't know that their pass rush was really as effective as even the numbers indicate they were. I know Big Cat Country had an article up earlier today, and when you look at when you were in games, there were times where you were like, where is the pass rush? I mean, and that happened for long stretches of the season where you were wondering where that pass rush went. Are they really in a position where the best thing for this team going forward is, hey, let's take the air out of the ball in games? I'm not sure that that's the direction I would go, and I've said that from the beginning. I understand wanting to be able to run the ball. I get that. But I think you're trying to build your offense around a franchise quarterback that you hope will be the future of this team at that position. You got to put him in a position where he's comfortable, and I think that he can fling the rock.
Well, that's the thing, though. Do they want him throwing it 40, 50 times a game? You got a young quarterback in Seattle with the same thing, and I think Russell Wilson's a much more advanced passer, even coming into the league, than Blake Bortles was. And sure, they are still ultra-conservative for the most part with a guy that, compared to other offenses, with a guy that's already won a Super Bowl.
Throw a couple numbers at you. Jaguars 29th in the league on run percentage, 36.4%. Only three teams were above 50. Houston,
in terms of the amount of times they ran the ball?
Yes.
Okay.
Three teams above 50, Houston, Seattle, Dallas. Well, let's say the Jags want to get into the top 10 next year. That's only 43% run game. So what is that?
Another 10% of your offense.
So what is that? If you run 60 plays a game, that's another six rushes per game.
Hey, I'll never forget, Tony, early in the summer, Jed Fish sat in here and told us what did he want to be? 64 to 55, 45 run pass.
And that's a shocking number given that they weren't out of enough games that they needed to throw the ball, you know, seven times for every three runs. I mean, they weren't behind enough that number needs to be what that number is. They were in a lot of football games where they could have had balance if they wanted to, and it sounds like the play calling just didn't.
Well, it was up to me. It'd be 80% pass,
well,
20% run.
You only trail Prisco by 20%. All right.
Good.
But you look at the two of those top three teams, Seattle, super successful, obviously. And I get it. They're there with the dominant defense in place. But Dallas didn't have a dominant defense. They had a dominant offensive line, though. But they're both teams that advanced very far in the playoffs. And Houston, basically with nothing at quarterback, was much more competitive than Jacksonville this year. So if you're good at it, it's still a winning formula potentially in the National Football League. I'll say this. I think they're closer to winning right now at this moment by doing that, because they're certainly – look, if we say – you know, can you win a bunch of games doing that? Well, they're already, the defense in the second half of the year, I thought, kept them in most of the games, right? So if you're scoring just one more touchdown a week, you're going to win several more games right off of that. They're nowhere close to winning shootouts, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so would you rather go the route where we're going to win a bunch of games 24-17 as opposed to 38-31, because I don't think they're anywhere close to winning games 38-31.
Well, I think what they hope is that, let's say they do run it better, that opens up the play action game. That means they bring an extra safety closer line. It opens up the middle of the field for your tight ends, because this team didn't throw it deep and didn't use the middle of the field, because teams say, we'll put our seven guys in the box, we'll overpower your offensive line, we're going to stop the run.
Right, and that's a big issue, right? And to me, that's why I said, as much as I want Julius Thomas, or I want, you know, one of the big name receivers out there, and look, they can do more than one. If I could have one guy out of the guys who right now are available that we know are going to be unrestricted, give me Brian Bulaga. I need a better offensive line before I do anything, because we talk about the Jags pass rush, Tony, disappearing for stretches this year. Look at the playoffs this weekend. Pass rush was disappearing across the National Football League because the good offensive lines were protecting their quarterbacks, and the smart quarterbacks know how to get rid of the football and, you know, not take jailbreak situations all that often. Everybody's going to get sacked on occasion. But I thought the line play around the NFL playoffs this weekend, Ryan, stood out to me nearly as much as the quarterback play did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and look, a couple of these games that I saw Green Bay, Dallas, I saw a little bit of Baltimore, New England, was just they're playing at a different speed than what we're used to seeing here.
Oh, sure. Well, when you
so
say,
far elite.
Oh, absolutely.
So it just shows you how far they got to go. But it's going to be tough to get one of those right tackles to come down here. Because those teams may be
Throw some cash.
Cash, 140 cents on the dollar, 130 cents maybe. On the dollar. So I'm all for that.
It's what you have to do, though, if you're going to get him.
And then it's up to that player. Do they want to leave Aaron Rodgers for Jaguars for how much extra? So it's up to them.
And that's a question. And I'm not saying, you know, Blog is the one guy who clearly jumps off the list to me. But the frustrating thing to me was watching Baltimore. Everyone said, oh, man, Eugene Monroe goes there. He's still a better player than Luke Joeckel. And that may be the case. He didn't even play. Throw a rookie in there. And they're stoning Chandler Jones the whole game, who is an elite young pass rusher. He was hurt for most of the second half of the year, so his overall numbers weren't that big, but he's having a terrific first half of the season. And nothing. I mean, Flacco's thrown it a ton, and they're not getting anywhere near this guy, and they're doing it with two rookies playing on the offensive line. So I think that's, for me, and I'm sure it's reflected with a lot of Jaguar fans, the frustration. You talk about youth, youth, youth. Just go out and block them. I mean, you got to do it. And that, to me, unless they fix that, Blake's not going to have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. Again, Greg Jones expected to retire as a Jaguar tomorrow. Several people tweeting me. They did it a couple years ago with the one-day contract with Mark Brunell, also Marcus Stroud. They've probably done it with a bunch of guys.
Brunell?
That's what somebody said.
Because the only press conference I remember with the 8 car was to announce him as pride of the Jaguars.
And maybe did they do a like a one-day contract?
Brunell wasn't one of those. The only four other guys that do it are Tony Boselli, Fred Taylor, Paul Spicer, and Donovan Darius, along
with
Marcus
Stroud. Who signed one-day contracts.
Correct.
Okay, so then, yeah, then it's not that many. Yeah, way to go, producer, because, you know, that's what I get for believing Twitter, I suppose. I only believe Twitter when it's from at Ryan O'Halloran.
Yeah, I'm believing Wikipedia over here, so.
Oh, you're believing Wikipedia. All right, well.
don't ruin it. Just say, hey, I know this.
No, that's research. That's the research department right there. 641-1010 if you want to get on board. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Metro Rooter Wednesday continues. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today live from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios here at Everbank Field. I think it's clearly to the Jags' benefit if Marcus Mariota is in the draft. And obviously for the Jags, they'd like to see quarterbacks go 1-2 in this year's draft, have their pick of any other position players. Any doubt in your mind that Mariota is going to declare at this point? He hasn't yet. Tomorrow's the deadline.
I think he'll do it today or tomorrow. I mean, they went back to Eugene yesterday, flew back. So I think maybe just let the dust
little depression
settle. Yeah, you know,
wash off.
Yeah, well, you know, morning period, but I mean, if he stays,
he'd be crazy to stay.
He'd be crazy.
You can't improve on the numbers he had this
year.
And
if you're Helfrich, you're crazy if you accept that answer.
Well, I mean, I'd accept it. I'd encourage him to leave. But as long as I gave him the honest, you need to go. If you say, coach, no, I mean, what are you going to do? Not take him back, but. He would be nuts not to come out for the draft this year.
He would be crazy. So let's say he goes. I mean, the other draft scenario for the Jaguars is, what is the value of that third pick if one of those two guys is still there?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, potentially, certainly. Boy. You talked to Tony Pauline last night, right, mm-hmm. Tony, on the Fat Tuesday show. We'll have him on, as a matter of fact, tomorrow on Jaguars Today. And just a programming note, we'll have Tony Pauline on from DraftInsider.net tomorrow. Matt Williamson, who's more of a pro personnel guy, on Friday from ESPN. I'm going to talk with Dane Brugler from CBS and NFL Draft Scout after the show today. And we'll either, if we don't have time to fit him in on Thursday or Friday show, we'll post that on demand for you and get a little more draft angle going there. What was Pauline's impression of the quarterbacks at the top of the draft?
He had Mariota as his number one prospect in this draft right now at the
period.
Top of his draft board. Yeah,
okay.
That he has him as his number one prospect, so that he really likes him. He says there's obviously some things he needs to work on, but likes it where he projects as an NFL quarterback. Talking about Jameis Winston, I asked him, you know, where would you draft Jameis? Because he's clearly behind Mariota in his mind. And he said, I wouldn't take him in the top 10 if it was me, but I expect him to go in the top 6. Says that he felt like his decision-making got worse from his first year to his second year playing on the field, and all the off-field stuff has him a little bit worried about him as a player. also said that if you compared those guys to Blake Bortles, I asked him about that as well, that he would probably, he likes Mariota as a prospect more than Bortles, but Bortles more than Jameis Winston.
Okay.
Disagree with several of those. I would take Winston number one.
I would too. I would too, just based on the football, but I do think the off the field is a legitimate concern if you're making him the face of your franchise.
And so, Mariota to me looked a very the last two games, Mariota looked very lean. You know, like how would he hold up physically?
Right.
And he did not look comfortable when he was asked to run some zone read, so he probably just wouldn't run it in the NFL. So I think Winston would be that my pick there. I don't think he gets out of the top five. I think somebody, if he's there at five or he's there at four, somebody's going to say, hey, it's worth the shot. I got a stable ownership. I got a, you know, I got a head coach who thinks he can help him out. I'm going to trade up and get him. And I would take Bortles over both those guys.
You would take Bortles over both those guys. Russ Landy, we had him on last week. He's now with the Montreal Alouettes. Said the same thing, which prompted a flood of Garnet Gold flavored tweets.
What a shock.
You're nuts. Yeah, I wasn't surprised. Just reporting the facts there, sir. A lot of talk in the last 24 to 48 hours now. Has it even been 48 hours? Guess it hasn't. About Cardale Jones. And it's a really intriguing position. The former third string, now national championship starting quarterback of Ohio State, who's not even guaranteed to start for his own team next year. You know, now, my guess is, I mean, Braxton Miller is hurt, and they say he wouldn't be available for spring football. I mean, he's a two-time Big Ten player of the year, but he may be behind enough that he's not able to catch up. But Barrett was ahead of him, too, until he got hurt. There's no guarantee he starts. What do you do if you're Cardale Jones? Do you seriously consider coming out in the draft this year?
Well, I do ask that question. I do ask that question for that scenario. You may not. What helps me 5 years from now? Sitting on the bench in the NFL next year or sitting on the bench at Ohio State next year? I think it would be NFL. If I'm Jones, I would transfer to a 1AA school. Become eligible.
That's a good point.
Become eligible tomorrow, and that would give him 2 years of eligibility.
Yeah, he's a redshirt sophomore.
So you got 2 years. You can pick a 1AA school that you know you're going to start at from the moment you arrive on campus, and say, hey, if I have a great year there, I'll come out.
What does that prove though to talent evaluators if you're playing against lesser competition?
Well, I think the barometer there is Flacco, who was at Pitt, couldn't get on the field. That's why those people don't coach anymore. Went to Delaware, lit it up as a junior, senior. I think what scouts want to see is they just want to see a greater body of work. Let them see enough so they can project, because Jones right now is so little of tape on him.
Right.
You can't even really, I mean, you are truly guessing. So that would be my advice to him, is that the key to you right now is you just need to play more. You have to go where you can play.
See, it's interesting, and obviously I don't think you think in terms of worst case, or you don't think, oh, but what if I don't play well? If you're Cardale Jones in that scenario, you would expect to hopefully go and dominate. But, you know, if he goes back to Ohio State, I'll say this in terms of learning. I give Urban Meyer credit, and I don't like to do it because I don't like the guy, but he's a hell of a coach. Cardale Jones at the beginning of the year was the third string guy, and, you know, they said, heavy, you know, I guess not motivated enough. Somewhere along the way, he was getting coached pretty well. I mean, even as the third string guy, how much development did Stephen Morris have last year in your opinion? I'm not saying he didn't, but, you know, isn't that a legit question? If you're a draft and stash kind of guy and you're Cardale Jones, you played three college games. You're nowhere near a starting job in the National Football League. You may not even be active on game day. How much legitimate learning is going to take place, and how many reps is he going to get?
See, I don't think you do really get any better, especially as a third guy. I mean, like Stephen Morris, I talked to him the last week of the season. He said his key this offseason, he needs to throw and throw a lot. He goes, because I only threw 2 days a week over here. Because, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you didn't practice. So that's why if I'm Jones, and you know, the other option for Jones is you do stay, and let's say you get your degree in that fourth year, which judging on his tweets.
I think that tweet was fake.
Okay.
The one about, you know, the one you're talking about where you said, we ain't come to play school, we came to play football, right?
I hated school too, but I got my degree. So if he gets his degree in 4 years, then after that fourth year, he can transfer within the 1A and play right away.
I have no idea. We don't know at least where he is academically.
He has options. I think the best one for him is 1A.
If you're Cardale Jones, why don't you just do the Aaron Rodgers career plan where you just go to the NFL, sit on the bench for 2 or 3 years behind a veteran quarterback, learn, and then be ready in about three and a half years.
Because then in a 5 or 6 year period, you've played 3 football games.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers was, you know, playing a ton of football at Cal.
He played 2 years at JUCO, 2 years starting in the Pac-10. Then he sat for 3 years.
As the backup, though.
But his bank account would look really nice at the same time.
Well, it wouldn't look as nice as if you come out now and you're, say, a fourth round pick or third round pick even, right? And you come back next year and you play, and I'm not saying obviously that's the gamble, but if you play and you put yourself in the first round, you can't make up the difference between the first round money and the third round money. That bank account would be significantly enriched even with one less year of earning. The money you'd be earning in those other years would more than make up for that.
The mistake that Meyer's going to make here, and he should head this off at the pass, is he should sit those three guys down and say, okay, there's going to be a two-way competition here. You know,
the odd man out?
He should tell Cardale Jones.
Should he tell Braxton Miller, because you don't know what his health is going to be like.
Well, that's been kind of the conversation, too. State. There's been rumors. Who knows? He may be transferring to Oregon, Florida State. You've heard all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
There's also been talk because there's a belief among scouts that Braxton Miller isn't going to play quarterback at the next level.
And I agree with that.
That he projects to something else, that there may be conversations being had at Ohio State of, why don't you play wide receiver here for a year, and we'll have these other two guys playing quarterback, which that would be interesting as well. I'm not even sure that it's best for Braxton in that case to try to play wide receiver at Ohio State for a year. But that is something that is out there right now. Braxton Miller not even playing quarterback his final year.
Well, let's be clear. Urban Meyer's put plenty of guys in the NFL. He proved with Tim Tebow, he doesn't give a damn about preparing them for the NFL. If what they're doing at the college level can help them dominate. I don't blame him necessarily. There are dual jobs. Part of his job is to prepare these guys for the next level. His primary job is to win. And Braxton Miller was plenty good enough to win with. And is it in your best interest, if you think he might be your best winning option, to put him at wide receiver because it might help him at the next level? There's a balancing act I think you've got to find in there.
Well, if I'm Jones, I'm not good.
What are you getting, a call over there?
Yeah, uh-huh. I'm on the radio, so I'm going to hang it up.
All right, that's good.
I make this decision myself. I don't go into camp because, especially in college football, if you have a quarterback competition during training camp, there's no real games. How do you, what's the decision based on? So I put the decision in my own hands. I go to Urban. I say, hey, here's my address to send me the ring. I'm going to go play football somewhere else.
He throws a pretty ball. I don't know, we don't know what his long-term accuracy is going to be like, but he threw some pretty nice deep balls, man, he was hitting guys down the field. I worry a little bit that he relies too much on his physicality. He's also pretty elusive running the ball, but I mean, everyone's like, wow, he trucked a nose tackle. That's great. No one wants you doing that in the National Football League. And I guess the closest guy he looks like is Cam Newton physically. And Cam only played 1 year, but he played a full year and he was dominant over a 13 game stretch. But this is a 3-game stretch against the best competition Ohio State played all year as well.
I mean, it's a hell of a foundation.
Right.
So
let me ask you, if he came back, in your opinion, if he came back and didn't win the job, how big of a black mark? In other words, if he came back, gambled, took out an insurance policy just in case he got hurt, because obviously he's going to do that, and you got to have the school pay for it because they're allowed to do that, and that would be one of the first stipulations. But if he sat behind Braxton Miller, a 2-time Big Ten Player of the Year, let's say they won another championship with this time with Braxton Miller at quarterback, is he draftable next year? Is he undraftable? I mean, what do you?
I don't think if Jones stays and plays mop up for a year, I don't think he can necessarily hurt his stock because there's still not enough.
But does the perception of, well, you weren't good enough to beat out this guy, or you know,
I think your previous point about Urban, his lone goal is to win that next Saturday.
Right.
I think the evaluators will see, hey, he was in an unfortunate situation where they're loaded at the position. If I'm an NFL scout, I want this guy to transfer tomorrow. See how much he wants.
How high of a
see how much he wants.
Well, let's see if Cardale Jones came out in this year's draft. Where do you think he'd go?
I mean, fifth round, maybe
that late. It's not a great quarterback class.
It would have to be a team in the fourth round who had a compensatory pick which they couldn't trade. Let's say a team that usually has compensatories is Baltimore. Would they take him in the fourth round?
And develop him.
Yeah, they have Tyrod Taylor as a backup.
Ryan Nassib went in the fourth round. I'm not, you know.
Yeah, he did.
And
I mean, so I mean, let's hypothetically say he comes out and he goes to the combine and has a Blake Bortles type combine, where if Winston and Mariota make the wrong decision and decide not to throw, is Jones throws at the combine, impresses people, starts going up and up and up. How what would be his ceiling? Where would you take him highest? Third round.
Second? I mean, could you? I don't know if you could spend a first round pick on a guy who played three games in college, but quarterback position, he's such an intriguing prospect, and you've got to have patience, obviously. You can't expect a guy who's played three games of college football to come in and be able to handle deciphering everything that's going on with a, you know, with the guys who come out as juniors who started 2.5 years, have trouble doing that. For the most part, it's an intriguing story. I guess we'll know by tomorrow. Tomorrow's the deadline.
These are the conversations we have that make me sad that Al Davis isn't around anymore. That old wild
round,
card
Tony.
In the draft, you never know.
At least the second round there.
Well, Al would be disappointed the Florida State kicker didn't come out this year.
Right. Aguayo is money, man. He could go from one Florida State kicker to another. Maybe, you know, one more year, they get rid of Janikowski. That might be the direction they end up going anyway. They still have Davis Blood running that thing over there, by the way. All right, 6-4-1-10-10 if you want to get in. The state in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL.
That would explain the Del Rio hire.
You don't like the Jack Del Rio hire at all.
Well,
hold that thought. Okay. Let's get into it because we got a break. We'll get into that coming up after the Honda drive around the NFL right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you all week long by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Happy birthday, Kyle Brady. According to the internet, Kyle Brady turned 42 years young on this very date. Longtime Jag. I want to say, Tony, he told David Lamb on the Jags pregame this year on the 20 for 20 segment that he now has his law degree and doing well for himself and his family. He's a good dude.
Now, once again, this is the part where I get you depressed. Where's Kyle Brady on the all-time receiving yards list for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
All-time receiving yards list. Top five? Is he top five?
He is.
Third.
He's fifth.
Fifth.
Jimmy Keenan, Mercedes, Maurice Jones-Drew, Kyle Brady at five. With 2,500
yards. We've gone over
yards.
This so many times, I should know him by heart by now.
Yeah.
That's why I keep Tony Smith around, ladies and gentlemen, because he knows things by heart.
2,500 yards, good enough for fifth in franchise
2,500
history.
2,500 yards.
Yeah.
Man!
Cecil was at 23-43. He would have got him.
How many teams?
He would have got him.
How many teams only have two wide receivers in their all-time top five? Right?
Probably not many.
Probably not that many. There are probably a few others, probably younger teams.
And Fred Taylor's six, though. Of their top six, they have two receivers.
Two receivers out of the top six. I would think that is difficult to duplicate. Also, on this date in football history, 1968 Super Bowl II, Packers beat the Raiders 33-14 in Miami. Who is the MVP of Super Bowl II, please? Anyone? Anyone?
Max McGee.
With Bart Starr. I want to say Bart Starr was the MVP of both of the first ones. I could be wrong about that. And then 1973, the Miami Dolphins wrapped up the perfect season against the Washington Redskins. Garo Yepremian scored basically for the Redskins in a 14-7 victory with one of the worst plays in football history. But it didn't matter. Miami held on to win. MVP of the Super Bowl in 1973, Tony, was whom? Who you got?
For what was this?
The Miami Dolphins, perfect season.
I do not know.
That'd be Jake Scott, ladies and gentlemen. I know that because it is written in front of me right now. I know that because the internet tells me so on that particular one. There you go. This Dayton football history brought to you by the best fence company in Jacksonville, fabricating and installing the highest quality fencing products for you at a competitive price, giving you unsurpassed customer service. It's amazing the customization that they offer. Check them out by giving them a call at 268-1638 or visiting bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Just a couple days after the Denver Broncos announced that John Fox and the team had parted ways, and
fired
a day after John Elway, did you see this yesterday? He stood up and began the press conference with John Fox being announced as gone by thanking himself. Want to say a thank you to John Elway. I mean, John Fox.
That was pretty funny.
A little bit of what you may think John Elway thinks of himself. To start that press conference announcing the team parting ways with John Fox, the pieces are really starting to fall in place regarding head coaching jobs across the National Football League. Broncos offensive coordinator Adam Gase is expected to be hired as the next head coach in San Francisco. The two sides reportedly are close to getting that done there. Broncos defensive coordinator, former Jaguars head coach Jack Del Rio, reportedly heading back to the NFL's head coaching ranks, technically at least. Burn on Oakland with the Oakland Raiders, and the New York Jets have pegged Arizona defensive coordinator Todd Bowles as their next head coach, leaving just a couple jobs right now with no coach solidly attached to them. Chicago, Atlanta, Denver, but many believe that the Bears will probably wind up hiring John Fox when everything is said and done.
A couple thoughts on the head coaching search.
Heard a big huff out of you a moment ago.
A couple thoughts on this. I wonder what Denver's play is right now, because they obviously had no interest in retaining either of those two coordinators.
Right.
You know, Peyton, if he does play probably one more year, and he looked 1,000 years old on Sunday. So
that being said, would you want him back if you're Elway?
I would want him back because Brock Osweiler probably isn't the answer.
And he may be the answer, but it's just, it is just so difficult to get to that level. Peyton Manning, he looked worn down at the end of the year, looked bad in that game. We don't know how bad the injury was. He threw 39 touchdowns this year, Ryan.
It's almost like Manning has got to the point, and Elway being a former quarterback is, and I would agree if he decided, okay, you've earned enough equity to show us once and for all in week 12 that you're done. You know, you've earned the right to come back. We're going to try and ride you one more time, maybe change the offense a little bit. And so that's Denver. I'd be interested to see, because when you make a move like that, you obviously have names in mind. Atlanta, I have no idea what they're doing, because it doesn't sound like they know what's going on in their own front office.
Well, they say now Dan Quinn, the Seattle defense coordinator, prefers the Atlanta job. Maybe it's because of the stability of the quarterback situation there. So if they end up with Dan Quinn, I think they'll end up looking smart.
I don't think Dan Quinn's going to be a great head coach, but if I was Atlanta, because I just, you know, I think he's running a defense that Gus built. So, and, you know, it seems like it's too convenient. He's been 2 years in Seattle. So, you know, if he has success, good for him. If I was Atlanta, because I had the quarterback, I had the receivers, and I needed my defense, I would have went to Rex Ryan.
I would have too.
And that deal would have been done quickly, and Rex wanted that job. And then when he didn't get the love back, he just moved on to Buffalo.
And that was the second time he didn't get the love back. Say,
yeah,
you know, he interviewed for
in 08.
Right.
Yeah.
The last time. I'm with you. I would have hired Rex Ryan as well. Players love playing for Rex Ryan.
Yeah, and what you need in Atlanta right now is somebody who can coach defense and fix the defense.
Well, Dan Quinn could probably coach defense. I mean, look, I get it. Somebody has to come before you, but he is not. There's not been a drop off in the quality of play of Seattle the last 2 years.
He would probably be further down on my list. I mean, he seems to have a flavor of the week deal.
What about Terrell Austin, the Detroit?
One year as a coordinator would scare me. I think he should be in the next cycle. Yeah, maybe next year. And then in terms of Del Rio, is I was always, like in the last couple of years, I was told that the best shot Jack would have at getting another head coaching job is if he could sort of get in with the owner.
Which apparently is the case. Davis loves him, and apparently what Reggie McKenzie wanted to retain Sperano is the reporter.
So you come in, so now you have a conflict before the opening.
The Raiders.
That said, what I'd heard is accurate, because that's how he got the job here. Is that Wayne Weaver hired him. You know, and that's who he worked on.
He's a very he's a guy that in one-on-one is very impressive. Mm-hmm. Can be very impressive, you know. He's very, you know, he's, to me, at the time when he was hired, similar to Gus Bradley. Gus is over the top with the enthusiasm, the infectious aspect of his, you know, personality. But I think there are a lot of aspects of that similar in JDR. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy to see him winning people over.
Yeah, so now, if you're the Jags, do you call Tony Sparano? Offensive coordinator experience, offensive line experience.
Possibly. So, I mean, he's kind of in that Bill Callahan mm-hmm. mold, right?
So, and I floated this out there. I said it with a lot of confidence on Callahan. I think he'd be a home run hire as an O-line coach.
Why would he take that, though?
Well, he's not calling the plays in Dallas.
Understood, but he was the OC. He's getting better money.
His contract is up.
Cleveland wants to talk to him as an OC candidate.
Well, I'm throwing it out there from the Jaguars' perspective.
Sure, if you could get him as that, I absolutely agree.
Because if you're him, you're listening to anybody who calls right now. You know, so and then him and Petten are tight from there for a couple 4 years together with the Jets. So he's going to have other options. But if I'm the Jaguars, if I'm a Jaguars fan, I would like Bill Callahan not calling the plays, but as a O-line coach.
All right, let's get a couple calls in here. We'll start with Dean up first on Jaguars today. Hello, Dean. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to get into this conversation about the quarterback, specifically the guy at Ohio State. You know, as it relates to the Jags, I mean, it's just critical that we get Blake Bortles, you know, whatever the relationship is with the new offensive coordinator, because that guy from Ohio State, let's be honest about it. Three games, Meyer coached him up. Say what you want about him being a carpetbagger, but the guy was told not to throw over the middle, take off and run, or throw it down the sideline. So I don't think there's a great sample size there, and it's really difficult. Look at the four guys playing this weekend in the championship games. I mean, these guys are cerebral. They got the physical tools, though. So I just think it's absolutely ridiculous to think this guy could play three games. Granted, they were big games and won them at Ohio State. But that's why it's so hard to get that position equipped in the NFL, though, because of the transition from college to the pros, though. It's just thinking and reading defenses and things like that. And I just don't think that guy at Ohio State has any clue to make the transition to the NFL at this point.
And I think you might be right. The key words being at this point. I don't know. Cardale Jones might be super equipped to be able to eventually do that, but if he comes in the NFL, it's going to be a long time before he's playing. Mm-hmm. And that's why if you're drafting him on just on the pure potential, you've got to have, if you're drafting him before one of those late rounds, you got to have a very secure front office / head coaching situation, talented team. You're not going to have the pressure to put him on the field right away.
Cut me off if I'm wrong in this, because I've been racking my small brain on this. Is remember Matt Castle never started at USC. New England took him in the seventh round.
Correct.
And he sat for a couple of years, caught lightning in a bottle when Brady got hurt, parlayed that into a big contract. So that's the only other case where I can think of where a guy was drafted with such a...
Brad Johnson backed up Casey Weldon. We talked about this. Now, not that he never started at all, but primarily backed up Casey Weldon at Florida State. And then turned out to be, you know, he was much more the prototypical guy they look for in the pros. And obviously, you know, they won a Super Bowl with him. But the examples are few and far between. To be sure, we got to take a quick timeout. If you're on the line, stay right there. We'll try to get to you. Coming up on the other side, 641-1010. Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday continues on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Here we go. Metro Rooter Wednesday continues. Jaguars today, 1010XL 92.5 FM. Did I say Kyle Brady was 42?
I think you said 42.
43. I'm 72. I get a 2 in my head. Happy birthday, Kyle Brady. Either way.
You said 72?
He was born in 1972. I didn't say he was 72. I say a lot of things, Ryan. I can't keep up with what I say half the time.
The 2014-2015 is going to be it'll throw me for a loop for another couple months.
Right. I had to think about that. Yeah, I was writing the date on a couple of things yesterday. I had to think about it. It's always the case.
Backdating checks a little bit. 2014 still.
Backdating checks? What would be the purpose of that?
Let's figure out your accounts. That was an old line.
I guess so. I'm sorry.
remember when you were in college? Like when I was in college, or even is you had to write checks for your bills?
Yes.
And you look at the bill and say, dude, 4 days ago, I better backdate this check.
Oh, okay. As if you had paid it on time.
Yes.
Gotcha. Now I got it. All right. I guess that's coming from a guy who didn't pay his bills on time right there in Ryan O'Halloran. Tweet him about it, at Ryan O'Halloran. All right, let's go to the line, 641-1010. Harvey, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Harvey.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, just two quick thoughts. First, thought number one is an observation. Seemed like all weekend long watching these playoffs, I'm hearing Jaguar players that are playing significant roles, their names called out. In some cases, the announcers actually went out of their way to talk about them. So, you know, the cupboard was not as bare as we like to think.
Yes, it was.
Point number one. Go ahead.
All right, go ahead. We'll go ahead and finish your point, and then we'll comment on it. Go ahead.
Yeah, point number two, and then I'll take it off the air. Point number two about the college playoffs. I think that, you know, they're talking about pundits are talking about expanding to eight teams, and I think that the danger there for the NCAA is once you start going down that path, your argument for not paying players, in my mind, goes out the window. So I got to hop, but
All right, buddy. We appreciate it. Well, as far as that goes, I think you can argue the argument is out the window right now. Uh-huh. You know, is it that much difference between an 8 and a 14 playoff? Most of the teams won't be in the playoff regardless. Your point on the cupboard being bare or not being bare?
Well, you know, you mentioned Jeremy Mincy. Well, he walked himself out of the door by being late, whatever, and, you know, so he saw the light. He wasn't ever going to see the light here.
Let me ask you, if Chris Clemens had been on the Dallas Cowboys, would he have been any less effective? If Ryan Davis, for instance, I mean, those guys, when you talk about, and I know sacks aren't the only stat, but Clemens had more sacks. Ryan Davis had as many sacks as Mincy did this year. We see him playing with a lot of good players around him or on a team that's advancing. And I'm not saying Mincy's been terrible, but he hasn't been if these guys are such difference makers, why do the Jags have bad records when they were all here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, he wasn't a great player here because he didn't have, you know.
He was okay.
He's a complimentary player who looks better on a better team.
And I think that we talked about this a little bit yesterday. What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to say, well, 3 years from now, Reggie Nelson will figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when they don't play well, Pot Roast wanted out of here, right? So there are guys, yeah, that are playing. Daryl Smith, I mean, how many times we can beat Dave Caldwell over the head for Daryl Smith to the end of time if we want to.
Right.
I think the point's been made about him. And he is clearly the one.
Right.
You look at Eugene Monroe, and people say, well, he's better than Joko. That may be the case right now. They played without Eugene Monroe, plugged in a
undrafted free agent.
Nobody, yeah. Right, by NFL standards. I'm not trying to insult the guy, but that's who he is by NFL standards. That, to me, is the thing that really is more upsetting, is how can they plug in a guy like that, just basically a street guy, and stone one of the best young pass rushers in the game, and the Jags can't figure it out on the offensive line. Other teams, we see that, and it's not former Jags necessarily, but New England shuffles linemen in there left and right half the time. I'm not saying they don't have some good core guys, but, man, you know, better line play. They've got to find a way to get it, and no more excuses. I don't care if it's youth or whatever. Next year, you got to – if you don't get better line play next year, you're going to handicap Blake Bortles and what he's capable of doing. If you do that, you're going to handicap the offense again. And if you do that, your win total's not going to climb significantly. If you do that, then you might be starting over from scratch with a brand-new regime here in Jacksonville. So fix the damn offensive line. Am I right? Yes, I am. Thank you very much. 641-1010 if you want to weigh in on that whole situation. Let's welcome in Dr. Stephen Lucy here to the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Take a look at your weekly injury report. Cinderic Marks going under the knife, I'm told, this morning, as a matter of fact. Dr. Lucy, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Recovery time, we've talked about this a little bit with Cinderic Marks. Tony is pointing out this is probably a little bit earlier than some projections had in terms of when he would have his surgery to repair the ACL. Realistic timetable, if everything goes well, there are no complications, when can we expect Cinderic Marks to be cleared for contact duty?
Probably somewhere between 7 and 9 months is a good guess. These pros, actually, you'd think they would rehab faster, but because they're at such an elite level, it does take them a little extra time, and because they're valuable commodities, they don't rush them back like you know, the high school kid, the only person that wants to get back quicker is he, is sometimes his parents. So they'll go back quicker. These guys are nursed around a little bit. But, yeah, they were big doings over. I think ESPN had a crew over at JOI today documenting Cinderick's ACL surgery. So we might see something on ESPN over that after they finish the story.
When the whole thing kind of plays out.
Correct.
A little bit. Dr. Stephen Lucy is one of 31 physicians with the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers of the Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute.
Another neat question. Roy Miller had his surgery, I think it was like New Year's Eve, with the meniscus. He was concerned that this thing is something that could linger. What are the risks involved if they had to take that out?
Well, you know, we obviously saw some of the risks with Jadeveon Clowney this mm-hmm. year, that he didn't exactly bounce back. What was done in that case was actually a meniscal repair. Some of it was removed, but the rest was repaired. And we talked about this last week. That is good in the long-term prognosis because you're trying to restore the knee back to the way it was. However, it has to heal. So, you know, he probably may not start running and participating until 4 months as opposed to 4 weeks when you just resect a portion of the meniscus. So it's a much slower rehab, but hopefully it will be better for long-term health of his knee.
The biggest injury news around the National Football League involved two quarterbacks. One, Aaron Rodgers with the calf injury, Peyton Manning with the quad. We'll start with Aaron Rodgers. It was reported last week he had a calf strain, which I suppose a muscle strain is roughly equivalent to a ligament sprain. Is that fair to say or not?
Yeah, it's fair to say. You know, the muscle strains or pulls are actually tears of the muscles. And the calf, we see a bunch of runners that get these little calf pulls. A lot of times they're over that in a week. The tennis players sometimes get a feel, a big pop. They almost feel like their partner hit them behind the knee and the calf. Those can take 4 to 6 weeks to recover. Aaron obviously was able to perform, perhaps not as mobile, but with muscle pulls in an NFL, that's the one difference that professional athletes have different than guys like me and you. If we pull our calves, we do some rehab, and we got a lot better rehab techniques. But they now are doing a lot of things. Sometimes they get steroid injections into these muscles. They are now putting platelet-rich plasma or sort of stem cells into the muscles for extra healing. You know, this is a money is no object. You or I come off the street, that might be a $700 or $1,000 out-of-pocket procedure. In the NFL, that just gets done. And those are some things that these professional athletes have done to their muscle pulls that allow them to recover quicker than the guy on the street.
So you're telling me I can't just put my blood in a centrifuge and line up all the platelets for $50?
No, if you come in with the correct change,
you'll make it happen.
We'll make it happen. And what's coming, which is even more exciting, is the stem cells, and those are actually coming from bone marrow, and they spin it down. Same thing, and the stem cells have even more healing potential than the platelet-rich plasma cells, and that's something we're going to have available at JOI in the near future. But that's going to carry another higher price tag, maybe in the range of $3,000 or $4,000. And they're actually doing an NFL study over at Andrews Institute on that right now. So these are considered experimental, so the insurance won't pay for it, but the biologic approach to all these things is very exciting, and, you know, who knows where we're going to go with that in the future.
You've got an older quarterback now, Peyton Manning, with reportedly a torn quad muscle in his right leg. You're scoffing over here.
If it was completely torn, would he have been able to play?
No.
What is the difference between, if you say torn, does that indicate completely torn, or is that a...
That's how I read it, but...
Well, this is kind of what we were just talking about. What's the difference in a strain, a pull, and a tear? And it's kind of magnitude or terminology. So to your point, absolutely. If you hear of an athlete that tears his quad, completely. We're going to operate on that. We're going to sew it back to the kneecap. They're going to be in a brace. That's almost as bad a rehab as an ACL. Yeah. It's a 4 to 6 month rehab. If he's got a bad tear, that's going to certainly hamper his rehab. Perhaps it'll hamper his footwork and his passing, but it's similar to the calf. You know, he's going to get all this treatment that we just talked about. It's going to be sore. They're going to wrap it up. And, you know, for a running back, he isn't playing. But for Peyton Manning, you know, he can get out there, although, you know, not as full force as normal.
What kind of chance would you give me if I fell off a boat 9 miles offshore to make it back in?
Ooh, about the same as me. Shark meat.
a lot of people are questioning, or some people are questioning, the validity of the story with Rob Conrad. What, you know, he felt he was 9 miles offshore, and as he ended up like 27 miles up because of the Gulf Stream and everything that was involved in it. You know, physically, what's going to happen to your body if you are in that kind of extreme stress, constant situation for hours on end?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We were fishing in a tournament off Johnson Beach and happened upon some guys that had gotten, were diving that had gotten separated from their boat in a storm, and we were the only fools still out there as the boats in the tournament. We were able to pick them up and rescue them, but they were in wetsuits. That's the difference, is a guy in not in a wetsuit. You know, it's certainly the water is warmer down there, but it's, you know, 77, 75, and prolonged exposure, hypothermia. But, you know, you by swimming as opposed to just floating, you know, it's like running. You keep yourself warm. And I would say it would have to be an elite athlete or certainly an awfully good swimmer. I mean, I'm sure some of these bold swimmers could easily have done that. But for a non, you know, swimming athlete, it's very impressive. The Gulf Stream took him, but he, you know, it's hard to know what's the right direction because you can't see land from the water. A lot of times down there, there's some high condominiums in 10 miles. You usually can see the condominiums, particularly in the evening or at night. So that points you in the right direction, but very impressive. And it required an elite athlete. I don't think any of the four of us would have made it.
Note to self, a couple things. We were talking about this with Logman yesterday. He's the outdoorsman type. Wear a life preserver. And from what, you know, just reading about this, you're an idiot if you have your boat on autopilot if you're by yourself fishing. Because for that very reason, they do have these tethers that can attach to you that will cut the throttle if you go overboard. And apparently none of that was in effect with Rob Conrad. So.
Right. You know, and I think we lost somebody within the past 6 months right off Jacksonville, very similar. I think he was up working on his radio antenna with the boat and gear, and I don't think he made it. But interesting to say, that's one of my Christmas presents. My wife got me one of these things that looks like a belt that I can wear, because I got to admit, I don't know if I had the autopilot, but I've been out there by myself.
You're not sure if you have the autopilot, in other words.
And, you know, I could qualify as one of those fishing idiots on a day myself.
We're glad you're here, Doc. We're glad you're here. Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine provider of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Good to see you, Doc.
Good to be here.
All right, there he goes, Dr. Stephen Lucy. We'll be back, and possibly we'll have a Jag popping in with us here in a couple minutes. We'll find out on the other side. Fan Feedback Spotlight coming up as well. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. Metro Rooter Wednesday, Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the home stretch, another 10 minutes of Jaguars today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hoping that we could have a few minutes with Paul Posluszny. I think he's in the gym right now, in the weight room. He's working out as we speak. He is heading over to Wilson's Children's Hospital this afternoon. A lot of this stuff goes on. It really does. And we probably should do a better job of mentioning it. But if you haven't heard the story, their conjoined twins were born here in Jacksonville. And they've undergone the process, or beginning to undergo the process of being separate. Conjoined twins are obviously you know, twins that are still connected when
right.
they come out, and so Paul is heading over there to go see them and the family. You know, it's not that Paul's any different than every other guy on this roster, and really probably happens in all professional sports. We just cover the NFL up close more so than anything else, and you know, a lot of these guys get one day off during the year, per week, and quite frequently you'll see, you know, 40%, half the team doing this on any given Tuesday. So it's a good story. We just wanted to catch up with Paul for a few minutes, but I'm sure we'll get a chance to do that in the upcoming week and a half or so before we head out to the Super Bowl. Today, Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Foundation Professionals of Florida asked you, in honor of Greg Jones, who is officially retiring as Jacksonville Jaguar tomorrow, official announcement to come later today about that. Who is the most physically imposing Jaguar, in your opinion, of all time? Tony, what was the feedback like?
Here's what we got from Mike, John Henderson, from Bryrock, Big John Henderson, other guys would beat you. John looked like he would destroy you. From Black Dog, we got first Jag that comes to mind is number 20, Double D. From Eric, I met Greg Jones in person once, and no one I've ever met was as cut as him. Big dude, hashtag beast.
He is cut like a silly person.
From Hadari, we got Greg Jones has a body built out of granite that the gods are jealous of. Big Hen, a scary dude. From Hyphen, we got first member of the Pride, Tony Baselli, was nasty, physical, and imposed his will on some of the best in the game. From Sean, MJD in his prime, never forget that block he put on Sean Merriman. From Bobby, I'll say Jones, but we've had a few. Stroud, Henderson, Hayward, Adele, even Garrard was trucking defenders. From Teal Rising, we got easily at Josh Scobie 10, hashtag guns. He included the photo.
I got, who was that from?
That's from Teal Rising.
Okay, is that Ben? I don't know if he's got a name on there, but I got Benjamin Smith sent the same photo that I saw on Twitter of Scobie flexing.
Yeah, from Christoph, we got number one, Big John Henderson. Number two, Greg Jones. Number three, Natron Means. And from Brother Jason, we got Blaine Gabbert, hands down. I mean, the guy killed Gene Smith, Mel Tucker, and Mike Mularkey's careers.
Well played. Several votes for Henderson on Facebook, several votes for Double D on Facebook, another vote for Natron Means on here. All those guys, Baselli is certainly a good one. There's no wrong answer, whatever your opinion. I'd probably vote for Henderson. It's because he's a mountain of a man. But one guy who didn't get mentioned, who's also a mountain of a man, Wydell is a freakishly large human being. If you're listening, Dave, I mean that in the nicest possible way. Do not squish me. All right. You ever stand next to Dave Wydell, Ryan?
I've not.
He is unbelievable. It's hard to fathom the dimensions of Dave Wydell, especially when he was playing, and you know he was at his playing weight. Big, big dude. Now that was a seriously intimidating and imposing offensive line back in the day.
No, it really was. And look, if I had to give one answer, my answer to this is probably Big John Henderson because he was the scariest guy.
Poor Marcus Stroud will never win this because he played next to John Henderson.
Right. John just played angry. Marcus was strong, you know, and not to take anything away from how physical Marcus Stroud played the game, but Big John Henderson he played the game angry, and you could see him playing the game angry. I'll say number two for me is Big Bo. And even being involved with the broadcast this year and listening to him, you know, talk about when they get ready for games against J.J. Watt and what his plan would be against a guy that's that dominant. That competitor that's within him and the reason that he was so great during his time here in Jacksonville, it's still there. That idea of I would have my elbow in his throat. I'd be laying on him on the ground. I'd be doing everything that I needed to do to let him know this is going to be a long 60 minutes for you today, bud. And I think that idea and that attitude he had that made him as great as he was, he still carries with him today, and it's fun listening to him when he gets all fired up again, knowing that he can't be out there on the field, but what his plan would be even against the dominant guys today.
If Baselli was a wrestler, the phrase, there's a foreign object in the ring, would be heard frequently.
Oh, yeah.
I think he'd be going to the waistband and pulling that out. Jaguars Today, Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Foundation Professionals of Florida. You got to know the symptoms if you've got foundation problems. Your exterior and interior walls may be cracking, windows and doors sticking. Cracks in your foundation. Look, there may be more than one solution to your foundation problem, but Foundation Professionals of Florida has all the solutions for you. They're licensed and insured. Give them a call at 287-2690. Visit them online at foundationprosfl.com. Who's the most physically imposing guy on the current roster? I'd vote Red Bryant. He's just a uniquely sized individual compared to some of these other guys out there.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah, That's
who else would
the
even
fact,
be?
The fact that nobody's coming to mind is a problem.
There's not many in the conversation. I mean, Poslesny is a, you know, he built like a brick, you know what.
Roy Miller's a strong guy.
Right, certainly. I mean, all the defensive tackles are big guys like that. But I think Red Bryant is, you know, a freakishly big human being.
He's
and again, I say that in a good way, Red. Please don't hurt me.
The guy, one name came to mind, the guy that I want on my side is Avery Jones. He's a big guy.
You may need him on your side early in the season this year,
yeah,
coming up.
He's going to, you know, I think he's ready for that role.
And he's going to need to be, right? I mean, I have a feeling he's going to need to be the first half of the year. I wouldn't expect. Since Derek Marks, if you didn't hear earlier, officially going under the knife today. And that just was happening. So, you know, hopeful for a speedy recovery from him. But can you count on it? I don't know.
Right.
I mean, everybody's
7
different.
Months, the short end of that time frame is August. So that's...
That'd be like 7 months from now, it'd be August, middle of August.
Yeah.
Training camp. So,
and, you know, one question I asked them the day after it happened was, okay, it's great that you're saying he'll be ready for week one, but he's not going to be ready for his regular workload.
Right.
So that's another issue. That's why you'll need depth there. And you got Ziggy. You know, I think that's why Alu is a priority in case you need to slide him inside a
he'll
little bit.
He'll be back, don't you think? They'll re-slide Tyson.
I think so. I mean, because I think he feels he's found a comfort zone with this staff.
I'm told one thing they love about Tyson is never misses a game. You know, you can always depend on him, very reliable in that aspect. He's a solid guy. Again, you know, we've said the line a million times. Not his fault where they drafted him. You know, obviously that comes with certain expectations, but he didn't ask for that. He certainly wasn't going to turn it down. Who would, right? You want to take me 10th overall? Come on. Get me.
And the expectations kind of diminish when you're on the third coaching staff.
Who will be the most physically imposing player on this team opening day?
Oh, Greg Hardy.
Greg Hardy? Ain't no way they're going Greg Hardy. They'll go in Dominick Sue before they go Greg Hardy. Ain't going to be Greg Hardy. Some people out there would
Greg Hardy
for Dominick Sue. No way, Shapen. You think there's a – are you being sarcastic? What are you doing over there?
I think Greg Hardy makes so much sense. I would
– Greg Hardy apparently is
– Leave your weapons in North Carolina.
And your girlfriend beating ways and all the rest of it. I don't want anything to do with Greg. I'll hug Ndamukong Suh before I would want Greg Hardy on his football team. I don't think particularly Ndamukong Suh is a good guy, but what he does is child's play, in my opinion, compared to Greg Hardy. So we'll see. That's me. How about Justin Houston? Take that, right? I don't think he, like you said yesterday, Tony, you know, a prayer, Kansas City lets that guy go. Right?
No, they're not letting that guy. Well, you're not letting the leading sacker in the league at age 25 walk away from your team.
Especially because for them to franchise him, they'll play he's a linebacker card.
Yeah.
The linebacker number's not the same as the defensive end number. You play in 3-4, and I'm sure there'll be a battle over that, and they'll probably end up settling somewhere in the middle between the two numbers on a long-term contract.
Still want Leonard Williams.
Leonard Williams may be that guy when it's all said and done. May be the most physically imposing guy. Who knows? How about Cyprian stepping up to the plate?
That'd be
nice.
Put
your strong state. Cam Chancellor right now, man.
Boy.
Is, you know, if you want to follow the Seattle model, that guy is playing at the highest level we've ever seen him play and pretty physically imposing, no doubt about it. All right, Rhino. Final thought, I think. What do you got?
We'll get some stuff in the old TU this week. We got two All-Star games this Saturday, NFLPA Shrine Games.
We're
going to have 10 players to watch for each of those two games that might fit the Jags. Maybe on Sunday we got Hayes Carlion's first mock draft. First round.
For the entire first round of the draft.
First round, filing deadline, so we decided let's wait until then. And then all next week we'll both be in Mobile for the Senior Bowl.
You and Hayes will.
Yes, we'll be there Monday to Thursday.
You'll check in with us periodically next week. We'll look forward to that, as well as John Osier doing that as well. Coming up tomorrow, David Garrard is in with us for the full show. Mm-hmm. And on Friday, we got Tom McManus for the second hour of the show, joining us in studio for the first time on Jaguars Today. Also, we'll be talking with the draft insider, expert, however you want to tournament. Tony Pauline tomorrow. Matt Williamson from ESPN, more of a pro personnel guy, on Friday. I'll talk to Dane Brugler after the show today, and we'll see if we have time to squeeze him in or if we post something on demand with him coming up in regards to the draft as well. So that does it for us, for Ryan O'Halloran, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and for Joe Fortunato, who's fiddling with a camera right now. He's taking great video of Ryan O'Halloran as we speak. That does it for Jaguars today. Thanks to Metro Rooter, the boys from XL Primetime. Coming up next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.